Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Well, my name is Cleve Francis. I'm a, I guess, scientist, musician.
Tomorrow won't be like any other day. Today, I gave my heart away.
I'm a cardiologist, but I'm also a musician. I've been that since I was a kid and back in Louisiana, and I've stayed with both of these things. I went on and finished my education, but I also kept my music going at every phase of my life. Well, you know, I tell people all the time, writing music and creating music is like giving birth to a baby. It has a life of its own after a while. You take care of it and you mix it well and you write it well. And once you set it out there, it has a life of its own. So I, you know, 50 years ago, I wrote that song and it's alive today and pertinent to people. And that's the way, you know, I try to deal with timeless music, music that's always going to be relevant to where somebody else is.
I'll always say the things she wants to hear, and I'll be contented with having her near. So be gone yesterday's sorrows and all you proclaim, and make room for and the joy it'll bring. Hear me now, I'm getting ready. I'm getting ready for tomorrow.
Well, greetings, everybody. You're tuned in to the show On the Road. I'm Z Lupitin, and as you can tell, I kind of lost my voice this week, so I'm going to keep it brief. It is Black History Month, and I can't think of a more perfect person to talk to than Cleve Francis, who in the 60s started writing his own folk music, which as a black artist did not get heard maybe until now. His amazing compilation, Beyond the Willow Tree, has totally blew my mind, and I think you're going to love it too. He also broke through in Nashville as a mainstream country artist, which was unheard of in the early 90s. Please listen to his story. He has so much to say, so much wisdom, and if you have a bad heart in Virginia, you can go see him and get fixed. Okay, here he is now, Cleve Francis.
Follow me to the willow tree. Follow me to the willow tree. You just follow me.
I think there takes a certain stubbornness and maybe obsessiveness to keep doing something even when a dream maybe seems to have passed you by, right? When you've devoted yourself to helping people with heart issues, you have a thriving practice, and yet a lot of folks don't realize that, you know, this guy was in the big time in Nashville for a few years.
Yes.
And where I learned about you was this beautiful reissued deluxe folk record called Beyond the Willow Tree. That's, as you mentioned when we were talking earlier, it's over 50 years old, and yet it feels just like exactly what I need right now. Your voice is just this beautiful storytelling conduit, and you bring this to the world now, and that's what I think is so beautiful about the digital world we're in. It's messy and it's tough for artists to make it, but you also get to discover lost gems from living artists like yourself that I would never been able to find otherwise.
Oh, they leave. And when they are never around to help you, no, when you need them, oh Lord.
And a lot of it was recorded when you were a medical student at William & Mary, right, in Williamsburg?
No, I was a graduate student.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to the Medical College of Virginia for my doctorate in medicine, but I was a graduate student in biology, so I wasn't even a doctor yet. I was, you know, I was singing on the street and a street musician, and people actually, one of my best friend who was a college professor at William & Mary actually raised money, used some of his own money and raised money from some of his colleagues to make that recording. I didn't have
amazing
the funds. I didn't have the funds to do the recording, and he said, no, you've got to record this. And so I recorded, and I left William & Mary, went on to medical school, and, you know, sold a few copies to my classmates. But, you know, we got about 250 copies made, but, you know, it was incredible.
You know, African-American artists didn't get the chance to be heard as storytellers, as folk musicians. It would have had to be, you know, rock and roll or funk or pop or R&B, or they'd sort of would get lost. I mean, Bill Withers might be one of the only ones who
only
could
one
stunt.
Is, yeah.
He sat on the stool with his acoustic guitar, you know.
Richie Havens.
Right.
You know, because somebody sent this record out to Elektra and Atlantic, all these big folk companies, and they, you know, I have the letters, they all rejected. Well, you know, we have no use for this at this time, and then yet, you know, some of these younger folk reviewing it now think that it was on par with some of the other stuff that was out there, but they didn't accept that, you know, from black artists.
When you talk about soul folk, I think is the genre that you are trying to pen, which I love. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's rooted in, you know, B.B. King, Sam Cooke, the Temptations, James Brown, and gospel music, Mahalia Jackson, and it's all those soul runs, you know. It's like if you listen to Peter, Paul, and Mary, and you listen to, you see it's sort of a clinkier sound, or even like country music, you know, it has a more nasal sound. This is like from the right out of the gospel church.
Right.
And it's about the black experience. I was saying the songs that I did write was from that, you know. And even when I sang Both Sides Now and you know, some of the folk songs, I gave it that same sort of a gospel feel to it.
And ice cream castles in the air and feathered canyons everywhere. I looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds' illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all.
And it's beautiful. I mean, the Joni Mitchell song is just gorgeous. And it's amazing how these simple recordings from the late 60s, maybe I'm biased, but if I could get in a time machine, I would just go back to about 66 to 70, maybe specifically 68 and 69. It just felt like magic was being recorded everywhere all the time. Like there's this special socially conscious feeling, you know, that there's hope that, you know, the civil rights movement is taking hold finally. But the softness in which you interpret some of these covers, it's, you know, Little Green Apples is another example, the O.C. Smith hit from 68. It's like it's a completely new song in your voice that is should have been heard in a different way, you know.
Oh, I wake up in the morning with my hair down in my eyes, and she says hi. And I stumble to the breakfast table, see the kids going off to school, goodbye. She reaches out, takes my hand, squeezes it and says, how you feeling, hon? And I look across the smiling lips that warm my heart, and I see my morning sun. And if that's not loving me, all I've got to say, oh, God give me the little green apples. It don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime.
Oh, that whole thing is recorded with just three instruments, a bass, a rhythm guitar, and you know, and a lead guitar. And it was as though you were in the club, you know, the coffee house, you know.
So right.
I've been to Nashville with the, you know, 24 48 track studios and
yeah,
that whole thing, and it's, you know, it works. But back then this stuff also worked, but this was about as closest that what you would hear if you actually heard the artist in person, you know. This was like a live performance on these recordings.
Where were you recording it specifically? In a little studio in Williamsburg?
No, there was a Norfolk Sound Studios. We found a studio in Norfolk and one in Richmond. And the guy, you know, he got a little tiny studio, and it was tapes. What, the digital recordings? And when everybody was hooked up to a mic, and so this was recorded in real time. It was not like I came back and did my vocals later. I
mean,
did all this in one setting. So, you know, the words and the feelings were there, you know, and I wasn't reading lyric. I didn't have a lyric sheet. I had written these songs and I knew these songs, and I was closed my eyes and would just was singing it.
Well, the earnestness, the feeling that you really care about these songs really shines, you know.
Thank you.
Especially in the last few days here in LA, where it's been torrential storms. I kept listening to that Gordon Lightfoot cover, Early Morning Rain. It just like felt like the soundtrack to our last few weeks here. It just felt so right.
Well, I did a song called Rain, the Jose Feliciano's Rain. So you might want to play that one.
I know there's multiple Rain songs on that record.
In the early morning rain, with a dollar in aching in my heart, and my pockets full of sand.
Everyone should listen to this Beyond the Willow Tree compilation. It's just my favorite record I've discovered this year so far. So, but let's go back to your Nashville period, because there's some fun stuff there. You know, it's definitely big and sparkling and much more polished, which sometimes is not a good thing. But I love that song Walkin'. I think it's really fun, man. I think it felt like something that, again, could be a throwback, that Garth Brooks 90s sound, which is kind of coming back now. I think a lot of people would receive that right now.
Well, Walkin' was a great song written by Will Robinson, and we really thought that song would give me entree into the Nashville country music But, you know, I was fighting a lot of other stuff other than, you know, just being a musician when I went to Nashville. So, but that song is now in the African-American Museum of History and Culture in Washington, D.C., in the country music section as part of Black Heritage. So I'm very proud of that.
Always a deadline, running behind time, trying to beat the red lights, it's wearing on my mind, losing the rat race, I need a little change of pace, I'm gonna put on some different shoes, get out.
Yeah, so that record came out in 93. You had Tourist in Paradise, 92.
Right.
And you received, obviously, some pushback, but also a lot of folks like Garth Brooks and other people, I think, were very kind to you and I think saw that you could really stand on your own in this very cutthroat world.
Right. Yeah, I thought, Jimmy Bowen, who signed me to Capitol, thought I could. But I just never could convince country radio to play my music, you know. And so, like I said, you give birth to these songs. People are now discovering my music now, long after I've gone. And that's one of the good things about digital and putting it up there. You know, it's coming back. People are like, God, I didn't know you did this. I didn't, you know. So it's a lot of good stuff that will be forever available.
Let's go back to your upbringing in Louisiana. What's the town that you were born in?
Jennings, Louisiana, which is in Acadiana. It's near between Lake Charles and Lafayette, where the Zydeco people come from. And that whole area was settled by French Canadians. They're called Cajuns, so they speak a little French, and there's some Haitian people there, and crawfish and gumbo and good food and a lot of blues and jazz and gospel and country music in that area. So I grew up there in a, you know, completely segregated environment, and, you know, taught myself to play the guitar, and decided that I wanted to not pick the guitar, but I wanted to, you know, accompany myself, and I started writing songs.
You actually tried to construct a guitar out of like a cigar box and
my father smoked King Edward cigars in these boxes, right. You know, they're you can run a car over them. So I took that and made a body of the guitar and put a piece of wood as the neck and used my mother's window screen wire for strings. And I did that for about a year or so. I guess my mother decided I was destroying the house, and she decided to save money to buy a guitar. And I always tell the story, she saved quarters in a jar for a year. Wow. To make a down payment on a $25 guitar, and bought that on credit, you know. And so she wanted me to have that. And she said, you know, if your grades fall, I'm going to take this from you. So that might be why I ended up being a doctor, so I could maybe keep playing my guitar.
What was the music that your parents were listening to when you were growing up?
Well, they were listening. My father's favorite singer was Hank Williams. I mean, he loved Hank Williams, you know. But they were listening to James Brown. They were listening to B.B. King. We were a very religious family, so they would listen to a lot of gospel music. Ray Charles was like with the Five Blind Boys. He wasn't on his own at that point. And a lot of Sam Cooke music, you know, Jerry Butler. It was incredible.
Daily my sin confess for his mercy.
Yeah, I did that drive once, you know, basically from New Orleans, then up through Mississippi, and then Arkansas. It's insane the amount of talent from both black and white artists came from that, you know, up through Memphis. I mean, it's just frightening how fertile that area was of people just creating the music that is listened to around the world, that I think is maybe the bedrock of what American music is: blues, soul, rock and roll.
But it, you know, it comes from a bit of suffering. You know, you're in suffering. I know the song I wrote, The Willow Tree, which really caught people's eye, was, you know, whenever I had anything bother me, I would go sit under this giant willow and with my guitar and write songs and think about, you know, my own life. And but it was always, it was struggle, and that's where some of the greatest music came from, is the struggle of the Deep South and the poor and country people, black or white. I mean, you're in the same struggle, you have the same, you know, hopes and fears, you know, for your family. And that's where that music comes from.
I mean, your trajectory from that environment to, you know, having a cardiology practice is pretty unique, right? I mean, and being a country artist, you know, this double life in a way. But I can't imagine there were many folks that you looked up to that you saw that were doctors, you know?
Now, as a matter of fact, I saw the first doctor I ever saw was in, I was at Southern University in Baton Rouge in student health. And I went in there and I saw this older black doctor, actually had gone to Howard University, I think, in Washington, D.C. And I just was totally amazed. I had no idea you could even become that. And I actually, that next week, I changed my major to pre-medical biology. And I decided at that point, that's where I was going to go. And luckily, one of the courses that we had to take was humanities, and the head of the music department took it, and a guy by the name of Dr. Hugh Perkins. And he said, you guys have come to this university to get something, but what did you bring us? And he said, I'm going to give you all 15 minutes. If you're a writer or you're a musician, I want you to come to my office and tell me what you do. And I brought my little guitar that with my mother had brought me reluctantly, and played some songs for him. And matter of fact, he canceled the rest of his day. He told his secretary to get a tape recorder. And I was in there, you know, maybe almost 24 hours. And he said, you're singing folk music. And he said, I hope you don't give this up. And I promised him that I wouldn't. And that's why when I got to William & Mary, I took my guitar, because I had been vetted by this great professor.
I know, it's like in another universe, maybe you would have been in the Greenwich Village scene, you know?
Yes.
And the Gaslight with Bob Dylan and Ramblin' Jack Elliott, and your life almost could have gone in this totally different direction. And yet, yes. You know, I think what you've done obviously in your medical practice and keeping your music is doubly important, maybe. And sometimes one dream fading out is not a bad thing in a way.
But yeah, you know, I never set out like from Louisiana, said I'm going to be a musician. I guess I could have, but you know, if you're poor and you come from that kind of background and you have the opportunity, you want more assurance. You know, if I spend 4 years doing this, I'm going to get a medical degree. If I spend 2 years doing this, I'm going to get a master's degree. And what I did, I was able to support my own music, and I wasn't dependent on anybody else to, you know, support it. So I was able to make my own recordings that actually serve as an audition for me to get a record deal. So I never really went to Nashville knocking on any doors. I mean, they actually contacted me after they saw my video, Lovelight video on CMT.
Yeah, you financed your own video. I mean, that's a pretty indie rock move in a way. You know, it's like, like people now are used to, you know, we have to make our own stuff and try to get it out there. But you kind of like, came from the side door into the country music establishment, and they had to pay attention because it was like, you know,
I
an interesting
like,
video.
I felt like I was doing some really good music in that song. Love Light was a, you know, was a great song, and it was a great video. So I actually flew to Nashville and met with the people at CMT, and they told me, well, we normally don't play independent videos here, this one is so good, we're gonna see what happens. So when they put it on CMT, I mean, it got into the top 10. That's when, you know, like 19 million people writing in. And so I was in the same rotation with Garth Brooks, Vince Gill, and Reba McEntire. And so that's when they said, well, who is this guy? You know, this black guy with his cowboy hat on. So they contacted me. So that, you know, got my record deal.
In their first storm clouds, washed away their love vows, and left them standing like total strangers. Called the love light has to shine bright. Send a strong beam into the cold night and touch your soul right down where it's lonely. It gets warm only by the truest love light.
Yeah, the other song that I was loving was Traveling Man, which is off like Love Light. And, you know, I'm not sure if you've ever thought of this, but I feel like you also could have been on a tour with like Jimmy Buffett and like Willie Nelson. You know, it's like there's definitely this sort of tropical good time feeling, which maybe, again, like didn't fit in that Southern boy vibe, but it feels really good, like to listen to
I
the song.
You know what I said? I was almost a chameleon when it came to music. I studied it so much, and I heard some of the greatest artists. Without imitating, I could do it all. I mean, I was like one of those artists. I think that I could do rock, blues, folk, and I guess I may have been ahead of my time at that time, because, you know, being black, out of the category, out of the, you know, so I was out there, and I think people are beginning to look at my work of music and beginning to see that I was a unique artist in that sense, and maybe before my time.
I'm a traveling man, and I've made a lot of stops all over the world, and in every
in that song, Traveling Man, you talk about, you know, you talk about walking on the sands of Waikiki.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a certain place you travel to that you could see, you know, moving one day if you ever actually fully retire?
Well, if I totally retired, I'd probably move to Italy.
All right. There you go.
I love Italy, but I probably live there. But I was a big fan of the Everly Brothers, man. I was like, there was nobody... Matter of fact, when I got to college, I was a big Beatles fan, and you know, it was an all black college, and I was like scared to tell people that I was into Beatles. So one of my classmates asked me, said, "What do you think of the Beatles?" I said, "I like them." So he said, "I like them too." So we got to be pretty good buddies, you know. And you had to be into James Brown and the Temptations, and and I've always been out of category, you know. Like when I went to Nashville, people were like, "How did you get into country music?" Or, you know, black people ask me, how are you into country music? I'm from the country. I mean, you need to go to Jennings to see what that is, you know. And so I never let these categories, you know, stop me from loving music. Music is magic, so I loved it all.
To let her into your heart, then you can start to make it better. Hate you. Don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. And the minute you let her under your skin, then you'll begin to make it better.
When you treat your patients now, do you ever recommend music to them as part of like therapy or part of treatment?
Well, most of my patients know about my music career, so they all have my music, you know, and they come to my concerts, and they, you know, and that's been an interesting thing too. I was wondering how people trust you with their lives and also follow you as a musician as well, you know, and that's always, but when I'm doing my music, I'm totally into it. When I'm doing my cardiology, I'm totally into it. So, and I think both are life-saving genres, you know. You know, you can save a man's life, but if you take away art and music and paintings, what have you got, you know? So I would, you know, give them the whole package, actually.
Yeah, when I first moved to L.A., the doctor that I had, he was also a pedal steel player and a slide guitar player, and saw these signed pictures of, like, you know, the Rolling Stones and people on his wall at the office in Santa Monica, and I was like, are you a musician? He's like, yeah. And we actually ended up like jamming a few times, like at his, like, you know, back shed in his compound up in Bel Air, you know. It's pretty funny,
you know. So, I had a patient of mine who one of her last wishes was she was dying of I guess cancer and heart failure, but I had a show at the Birchmere in Alexandria, Virginia, and she made her friends call an ambulance in a hospital bed and bring her into the venue.
Oh, man.
And she was only able to stay the first half. And the last thing I remember her alive, she's waving as she's being rolled out of the venue.
Wow.
It was that kind of commitment. I mean, I love it.
When you covered subjects like Martin Luther King and his fall, you know, in right. that song Ballad of Martin Luther King, did you feel like you were part of the civil rights movement through music, or was it more interpreting the time just as an artist?
No, I was part of it. You know, actually, I graduated from high school in 1963, and that was the time they had the March on Washington. And you have to realize, if you're from Jennings, Louisiana, and you're Black, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you graduate from high school. High school sort of protects you. You know, you're there, but once you finish, you know, you're out there in the world. Either you're going to go back to pruning trees and picking up trash, or join the military, or you're going to go on with your career. And there's no financial support. There's no nothing. And I was pretty much a fan of Dr. King, who was opening the way. And once I got in school, I never got out. I mean, because, you know, his struggle was getting us the opportunity to attend these schools, but somebody had to be ready to attend them when they opened the doors, you know, and I was going to be one of those people. And so I didn't, you know, go out. I wasn't a marcher or nothing like that, but I was fulfilling the dream of Dr. King, going to finish college, going to the College of William & Mary. I was the first Black graduate student to set foot on the campus. And I was the one of the two Blacks in my medical school class and the first cardiology fellow at the George Washington University. So I was paving, you know, those doors that were open. So Martin Luther King's was very important to me. So I've written several songs on Dr. King.
And maybe he was like Moses, who led the children to the promised land, but who could not go there himself and stood with the rod in his hand. And if we are like the children of Israel, we are grieved, but we must go on to inhabit God's promise, though the journey has been weary and long.
I can't even imagine what it would have felt like seeing not just Martin, but all these people cut down in their prime as they were trying to change the world. I mean, that time was so fraught with both hope and this sliding back, this whiplash effect of the, you know, white society tearing progress backwards.
If you look at from from slavery. I mean, when blacks came over in, 1619 in Jamestown, and, you know, we were just regarded above a common beast. I mean, we weren't, you know, right. like a dog or a cat or a cow. And to, you know, have been given your freedom and it taken back during the, you know, Jim Crow, and then to be denied, you know, to vote, denied going into schools. You know, there were only two schools I could attend when I left Louisiana. It was Grambling College and Southern University. It was illegal to go to LSU. So you're fighting against those kind of things, like with your hand behind your back, you know, but I hope that my life has been a illustration of what you can do if you get focused, you know, and you can be an artist, you can be a doctor. And I speak to kids now, and I had a program called Dream Big, you know, here in Northern Virginia. We were trying to say, like, okay, I came from the same background. I mean, you have to do this. Like, you got to set your GPS at success. And no matter where you go, the GPS, you know, you push on the button, it always will redirect you back in the direction you should be going in. And I did that when I went to country music. I did that for my whole career, and we'll continue to do that.
But I think it also takes some balls and some ego, right, to be the person that you are, saying, I'm going to be the first guy here. Right. I'm going to be the person to break down the door. I'm going to finance this music video myself. I'm going to be a country artist, a doctor, where I didn't see anybody before me doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Right. I think you have to have the confidence in yourself, in your own abilities to really do that.
Well, I have to give that to my mother. My mother was a lady by the name of Mary Frances, who had, you know, more balls than anybody. she was my mentor. And she said, you know, you don't really let anybody determine what you're going to be. You know, you can't be everything. But if you decide on something, this is, let people know, this is, you're coming through, move out my way. If you ever got to go around you. And so I felt safe. I think my mother had instilled an ego and me and my five sisters, you know, that we were somebody, we were important, we were smart. And, you know, you're fighting up, you like salmon swimming against the current, but, you know, you're only going to get one life. And you can't wait in line for people to say, okay, not this year, next year. And, you know, every year you get older. So I figured, what I'm going to do, you know, there was a point where my voice was going to fade. And if I listened to the people in Nashville or whatever, I never would sing again, you know? So I was like, hey, right. people come in, if I finance it myself. And it turns out that I am a bona fide artist, you know, here and overseas. I also had fans in England and Scotland. And
that cover, Getting Ready for Tomorrow, also feels like you see the whole world ahead of you still, which is really beautiful. Yes. You know,
but you know, the thing with me, I never came out an angry man of all the stuff that has happened to me and my family. My mother was very adamant about us not being angry, because, you know, being angry and hostile can, you know, take away your forward movement, might get yourself in trouble. And I always felt, and that's why I was glad I went into medicine, because I see human beings as all the same. They're just covered with different skin. But underneath, I can see, I know what it looks like. I know what your heart looks like. I know what you take the skin off. I know what it looks like. And it's basically all the same. And that's what I've proven, you know. And I love people, and I never take sides. And, you know, you can believe politically what you want to. You can be a different religion, race, but we're all basically the same.
I'm getting ready for tomorrow. Oh yeah.
What did your father do when you were growing up?
He was a common laborer. He was, you know, he waited at the railroad track for people to whistle to him to work for a day. It's day labor. My parents, between them, didn't have a fifth grade education. They were sharecroppers, and they had to stop school and pick cotton and when the crops were in. And so they were adamant about us getting an education, man. Education will set you free. This is how you get freedom. And that's true. I wouldn't have produced any music had I not been educated.
Well, it's hard to believe that there are folks, you know, who are my parents' age, you know, people who grew up in the 50s and 60s who have a first person account of the level of segregation that still existed, especially in the South. It feels like when we talk about it, it's like another time way back in the olden days. It's like, this is your childhood. You know, this is something that you experienced every day.
You were on one side of the track, and actually I walked in a place once to get some matches. I asked for, and I got knocked out because I didn't see the, you know, white only sign. You know, you couldn't go to the movie theater. You couldn't drink at fountains. And actually, being a doctor, it was interesting because when I was a kid, you couldn't go into a doctor's office, and we couldn't even use the local hospital that was in our town. We had to go 44 miles away if you're black to get treated.
So messed up.
Yeah, that was. And but you know, I formed an interracial multicultural practice. So my practice had blacks, white, Jews, Muslims in it. So very successful in all of Virginia. So I was able to accomplish that as well.
I always remember the story that my grandfather, who's Jewish, told me about. You know, he was a brilliant guy who survived polio. He was, you know, basically told he was never going to walk again. He somehow got out of it and wanted to be an aeronautical engineer working in the space program and all that. And he just was dead set on, I'm going to MIT. You know, it's where all the best space scientists come out of. And they're like, well, we'd love to have you, but there's a Jewish quota. You can't come, you know? And I'm like, okay, so if that was me, I would say, well, screw you. I'll go to Harvard or something. And he goes, no, I went to NYU for a year and then transferred in.
That's right. Yeah, you
I'm
only
like,
got
what?
One.
Why? Because he was like,
man,
because
you only
it was
got
the
one
best.
Life. You got one life to live, man. You can't, and these prejudices and biases will lock you down. I'm sure there's a lot of musicians that we'll never hear of. They just never stuck it out. Luckily, there'll be some accounting of Clee Francis's music, you know, when I'm gone. So
it's like that story where Alan Lomax goes down to, you know, the farm where Muddy Waters, McKinley Morganfield is working, and he had never heard the sound of his own voice in a recorded medium, right? And he like played it back to him. And he was like, well, yeah, this is pretty good. I got to get out of here.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, representation matters. You got to be able to see that doctor in that clinic to know like, oh yes, I can also do this. You have to hear someone like Richie Havens or maybe Bill Withers to be like, oh yeah, I can take my guitar, be a folk musician and be black. But like not enough people somehow got to be recognized, you know, in time, in a way,
because passed over. All I wasn't trying to do that, but I looked like the music would have gotten to somebody. I think people are beginning to put my music together, which is kind of nice. And I've recorded all, if you listen to my three CDs on Capitol, I've covered a whole range of music, recorded some Hugh Presswood music, recorded Bill Anderson, Tips of My Fingers, you know, so a lot of great music that I was able to get my hands on and record, and coupled with my own stuff, I think. But I'm really happy with the Beyond the Willow Tree album, because that was the beginning. That was my very first recording.
You have a song called "You Do My Heart Good," right. which actually charted. You know, when you heard your voice like on the radio, when you heard it sort of being played around sort of like a Garth Brooks or a Marty Stewart record, did it feel surreal? Did it feel like
I just couldn't believe, you know, at that time I would just close my eyes and said, I don't believe this, you know, like somebody's playing it on the radio or in the car. Well, even see the videos come up on CMT, and it was a long, you know, it was a long journey. I mean, and I was just, you know, I was not going to let a moment go by, but I was, it blew my mind, actually.
You do my heart good. You're as constant as the stars that shine. You put a sparkle in these eyes of mine. I see the world in a whole new light. Everything is beautiful with you by my side. You do my heart good. You make love feel like it should. Anyone can see by the way I look. You do my heart good.
Of course, you experienced the 92 LA riots after Rodney King was beaten up, and then obviously the O.J. Simpson trial. When you see stuff like George Floyd now, does it feel like deja vu over and over again? Does it feel like one more small step forward, or does it feel like there needs to be so much more done before there's an actual step forward?
Oh, yeah. You have to constantly fight racism on a daily basis. I mean, the South really never lost the war. they seem to regroup, you know, every now and then they'll come back as the Klan, and then they come back in different political parties and stuff like that. So there's always that group. They really never give up, and you have to just get more people, and it can't be just only blacks fighting this. It has to be whites and blacks and, you know, and any colors in between, because that's very detrimental to the future generations. I mean, you can't keep this up. You cannot keep this up, and we can't promise our kids that, you know, yeah, you can be anything you want to be, and life is fair and tolerate. And I think the biggest problem is when people ignore or don't say anything because it doesn't affect them,
mm.
you know, directly. That's the most dangerous crowd of people who just see it and say, you know, it's not right, but don't do anything to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
In this, when we had that Black Lives Matter protest across the country after George Floyd, the interesting thing about that thing was that there was many white kids in those rallies as blacks. And it was the first time you had seen that.
Mm-hmm.
And it went on for days and for months, you know, and so people join in. So we're not going to let our children grow up in a world, you know, like that.
Yeah, I mean, I was in those marches and right down Hollywood Boulevard. It was like marching right down Hollywood Boulevard with the you know, the stars and the Walk of Fame, and you know, the cops are shooting tear gas at people. I mean, it's like this bizarre, again, like you feel like you're in a movie that you watched, you know, from your parents' day, you know, when they would march against the Vietnam War or across the Pettus Bridge with Martin Luther King. It's like you have to keep marching. It's like it's like you have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
People forget, you know, and I think music now has gotten so apolitical that it's lost the knife's edge to make a difference a lot of times, right? Now, some people are really speaking out, but most people, especially in country music or mainstream music, wouldn't dare to offend a part of their audience that might be pulled away by a political message. And it's just cowardice in my mind a lot of times.
Yeah, you know? That's true. The latest song I wrote was a song called Buffalo.
Mm.
And I'll have to send that one to you. I wrote that in response to that gunning down these 10 people. I wrote a song called Buffalo, and I actually got a letter from the mayor of Buffalo thanking me for the song. But, you know, something comes up, I'll get my pen out and write it. I'm not singing it, but I wrote the song. There's another fellow singing it, but I thought some need to be said about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard sometimes as a band leader myself, and we have a horn section. It's a big, fun, soul, funky sound, but then we go into these more harmony folk songs that can be more hushed and quiet and sad. And sometimes the dynamic range is so great that it throws people off. We have this song that we started doing that's mostly a duet about the overturning of Roe v. Wade and women struggling to find a place to, you know, basically be treated like human beings and make their own choice. And we play that in the middle of a set sometimes, and the air just like goes out of the room. Sometimes in a good way, sometimes it's like, well, how do we even recover from that? Okay, here's a love song, you know. And I struggle with the idea of like when to insert my opinion into a set, because I've long, you know, gone past the point where I'm not going to speak up about stuff. I probably speak up too much about stuff. But if I don't do it, who's going to do it? You know, a lot of people, even in the Americana folk world right now, don't do a damn thing to say, you know, what's happening with the Supreme Court, with violence against, you know, Asian folks and gay folks and Black folks and trans folks. It's like no one says a damn thing. They just, you know, write another song about falling in love and getting drunk and, you know.
Well, that was one of the things about, you know, financing your own music and doing your own music. You determine what you put out, you know, which was good. I was like, no, don't record that. No, I'm recording this. If somebody wants to listen to it, they'll hear it.
Now, I still believe also that the most effective type song, even if it's political, still has to be a good song, has to have a hook. You have a great cover of Dylan's With God on Our Side, right?
Yes, yes.
And again, it's like that's almost slam poetry building and building and building, with God on Our Side being this acidic barb that keeps hitting you, you know? And that's always the hardest thing to reconcile in this country, is that the folks who are taking away women's rights are saying, well, that's God's will. God doesn't want you to have the choice.
Right.
And that's, how do you argue with that? So it's like an impossible argument.
But that's one of the songs that I heard from Bob Dylan, and I was just like, God, because, you know, we, as Blacks, I mean, we fought in every war that there is, that they would let us fight in. And yet when you came back, you know, you couldn't eat at a restaurant, you couldn't do that. And so I was very much, I wasn't anti-war, but I'm saying you're using God as an excuse to do this. I mean, you know, which God are you talking about? And I thought that song was very significant.
With God on his side. Oh, the Spanish American war had his day, and civil war too was soon laid away, and the names of the heroes, I was taught to memorize, with the guns in their hands and God on their side.
I love folks like you that have real history that they've seen and created themselves. You know, most of us, you know, quote unquote young folks, we're still trying to figure it out. So it's great to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
And accept it with pride. For you never ask questions, no, if God's on your side. Now World War II, it came to an end. We forgave the Germans, and called them our friends. Though they'd killed 6 million, in the ovens they die. And oh, the Germans now too, Lord, have God on their side.
There he goes, Cleve Francis, everybody. A big thanks to him for getting on the line and sharing his history with me. This compilation record, Beyond the Willow Tree, you can check it out online. It was put out by Foraged Sounds. 21 songs are on here. Some really beautiful stuff, as you can hear. The Ballad of Martin Luther King is really moving, but also amazing covers of Dylan, as you're hearing, Joni Mitchell. So many folks that really were being heard for the first time right as he was recording it as a young man. And you can check out his country stuff, which is really fun too, on his website, clevefrancis.com. I apologize for my rough voice right now. I lost it a couple weeks ago singing up in the mountains in Utah, and it has not come back. It's kind of scary for me, kind of like losing a superpower out of nowhere. And I saw a doctor about it. Looks like I'm on the mend. But Dust Bowl Revival will be heading to Colorado next week, and I will be singing the best I can with the crew blasting behind me at their very best. We're playing in Colorado Springs on the 22nd of February, and then going to Fort Collins and a big show in Denver on Friday the 24th at the Bluebird Theater. Always wanted to play there, and finishing up in Steamboat Springs at the Strings Music Pavilion. If you've lasted this long on the episode, you must be a true champion, and true champions can donate to this show to keep us going. On the show page on iTunes, you can see that there's a red circle link to donate. It really helps make this possible. If you want to hear the music that I am falling in love with each week, well, I have a new radio show on 88.5 FM, the SoCal Sound, here in LA. Yes, 7 a.m. on Saturdays. It's called the Sway Out West Radio Hour, and you can hear it from anywhere online. That's it for me, folks. The show on the road, as always, is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Zach Lupitin, and we are a part of the BGS Podcast Network. Stay safe, turn that music up nice and loud, and we'll see you in a couple weeks with more episodes.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.